We began to look at the case of Cain and Hevel last week. Just a small thing from Medrash Rabbah. We have here a very interesting Medrash that takes note of the fact that Chatat, ostensibly, is feminine. Rovetz is masculine. Says the Medrash, Chatat Rovetzet ein k'tiv kan. It should have been written, Chatat Rovetzet, but it's not written here. Ela chatat rovetz. Why? And I want you to understand, zehu lo pshat. Bitchila hu tash kenekeva. Who, whatever it is that is the who, is weak and frail like the female. Achar kach hu mitgaber kezachar. And later on, he becomes stronger like the male. Notice the word gever. Mitgaber, gibor. Amar Rabbi Akiva. Explained Rabbi Akiva. Bitchila dome lechut shel akavish. In the beginning, it seems like a strand of a spider's web. Ulevasof neesa kekela hazo shel sfina. And by the end, it becomes like the rope. You know, those strong ropes with which they tie the ship. Hadahu dichtiv, that's why it's written in Yeshayahu. Hoy moshchei ha'avon b'chavlei hashav, u'ke'avot ha'agala chata'a. Oh, woe to you who draw on sin as if it were vain little ropes, meaning like strands that are easily broken. And they become finally like ropes that draw the wagon. That is chata'a. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, he needs to one-upmanship. Bitchila hu ne'esa oreach. In the beginning, he's just a guest. Ve'achar kach hu ne'esa balbayit. And next thing you know, he acts like he owns the place. Hada hu dichtiv. That's why it's written, and he's talking here about the sin of David with Bathsheba. Vayachmol lakachat mitzono umipkaro laasot laoreach habalo. The Navi came to David and told him a parable about a rich man who had lots of flocks, but was a miser, and above all didn't want to take one of his lambs to prepare it for his guest that came to him. But what happened at the end? Vayikach et kifsat ha'ish harash. But he took the lamb of the poor man. Vayaseh ala ish habaylav. And instead he sacrificed and ate the lamb, not from his flocks, but from others. And I will close this and try to explain to you why I think this is so important for us to understand, because it has implications for the rest of our understanding of the continuation of the story. In Ivrit of the Tanakh, it is not unusual to call something by its consequence, by what it ultimately becomes. For example, we will sometimes refer to the fetus as hayeled, when we don't yet know that it's hayeled. And Chazal there tell us, al shem sofo, because of the what it ultimately becomes. But Radak points out, interestingly, that when it comes to sins, the Torah will sometimes refer to the consequence of a wrongdoing by the name sin. So the chet is not necessarily, or the chatat, is not necessarily the ma'aseh, the act that you committed, but what comes at the end of it, and it can also refer to the onish. In addition, it's important for us to know the difference between a chet and avon, which was implied in the case of Rabbi Yitzchak in our medrash. A chet lehachti, lehachti matara, is to miss the mark, and is usually treated as a shgaga, something that you did by accident or lacking intention. What can cause you to miss the mark? We would use this if we were archers. If you were drawing your bow and shooting an arrow and you missed the target, we would say, Hichtata et hamatara. What you might cause you is that you didn't aim properly. The arrow might have been crooked. Or a wind came and you didn't take into account the wind that may have actually pushed your arrow, where had there been no wind, it would have hit its mark. To indicate chatat, we sometimes have an act which is without intention. We have sometimes a situation in which we have intention, but we hit the wrong thing, we said it to the wrong person. Or we have sometimes a case of circumstances that caused an event and an accident, if you like, without necessarily any intention, bad intention, or hitting the wrong mark. For example, if you were driving a car and there was black ice on the road, you may have actually been driving very carefully, very cautiously, but could not see the ice, could not foretell that this would happen, and you found yourself slipping and hitting somebody. Therefore, a chatat is always deemed as the appropriate korban, an atonement for something that is a shgaga. An avon, on the other hand, is seen as an act that was intended. What also would mitigate a chet or avon is if you didn't know that something was a wrongdoing. You didn't know it was forbidden. Or if you knew that killing was forbidden, but you didn't know that giving him a punch in the face would cause his instantaneous heart attack and cause his death. So you may have wanted to hurt him, but not necessarily to kill him. All this is crucial for us to understand whether or not what Cain ultimately did is an intentional crime or an unintentional crime. And if it is one or the other, why his punishment would be what it is. So what we're going to do today is first look at the text and try to make sense of it. You will recall, of course, that God recognized that he was on the path to some kind of violence. And he warned him, Im lo teitiv, lafetach chatat rovetz. At the opening is crouching something. Either your jealousy, which is the background and the motivation for the violence, or, if you like, the sin itself, the hatred that will ultimately lead to him killing him. Let's see what happens in the process. Having been warned, we suddenly find the following. Vayomer Cain el hevel achiv. Cain said something to hevel, his brother. But you're not told what he said. What did he say? Vayi biyotam basadeh, and it was when they were in the field. Vayakam Cain el hevel achiv. Cain rose up towards, it doesn't say al, el, hevel achiv, vayahargeu, and he killed him. What did he say to him? What drew hevel to the field? Remember, the fields belong to Cain. He's the farmer. Hevel himself takes his sheep out to, if you like, Hefkel place, to the forests, to the uncultivated areas where there's scrub brush, where they can eat there and not affect the fields. We're not dealing here with the classic war between shepherds and ranchers. You remember? Way back when we had, or shepherds and farmers, as some have argued. Some have argued that this is foreshadowing the Egyptians' loathing of shepherds, because the Egyptians themselves were farmers. think that it's a relatively simple thing. Tell me, what did he say to him? And yet you're not told. Again, remember, this entire story has more that's covered than is uncovered. Comes our Medrash and tells us what he said. Or at least what everybody speculates that he said. Comes Medrash Lekachtov. Ma Marlo, what did he say? Ein din, ve'ein dayan, ve'ein olam acher. They argued about theology. And he said, there is no law, there is no judge, and there is no world to come. And by arguing about their faith, mitoch kach harago, in this heated discussion, he killed them. In his bitterness that Hevel outdid him and made him look bad, he picked up an elah. An elah is a shovel. And hit him over the head with a shovel and killed him. But what did they argue about? There's no judge. There's no justice. If there's no judge, then there is no God that interferes in human activity. What might have led Cain to that conclusion? That might have been simply, according to some, his expectation that if he brings fruits from the field, a fire would come out from heaven and consume it to indicate that there's a God that watches. But nothing happened. As for Hevel, he took a lamb, the best, the finest, and he slaughtered it. So it was already dead. So frankly, it didn't require any kind of divine intervention to indicate that God had actually accepted it. Seeing that now God did not accept it, the argument was, there is no God. But what's the problem with this solution? What is questionable about this is the fact that God turned to Hevel and spoke to him. So he knows full well that there is a Dayan and that there is a Din. They may argue about Olam Haba. So what is the purpose of this Medrash then? So let's proceed and consider the other opinions. Medrash Agoda, Vayomer Kain el Hevel. And now we hear the same thing all over again. Vayomer Hashem el Kain, Ei Hevel Achicha, where is Hevel, your brother? When God asks, where is your brother, might that not confirm for a moment that maybe he doesn't know everything? Maybe I can pull the wool over his eyes? I wonder. Comes Radak and tells us as follows. Vayomer Kain, amar lo atochachot shehochicho ha'el. You know what he told him? He told him exactly what came in the previous verse, what God had told him. God said, Lafetach atat ovetz, right? Remember that? And what else did he say? U'elecha tshukato ve'ata timshol bo. He came and told him, God told me that you want to be just like me. And it's my job to rule over you. Ve'amalo. And he told him, Ata garamtali. It's your fault. You caused this. Ve'hosif kas ve'hoges. And added even more rage and anger. Ve'lo kam alav bifnei aviv. But he didn't burst out in front of their father or their mother. Aval natar lo ad shiyu shnehem basadeh. But he kept it in his belly until by chance they were both out in the field. Ve'az itkotet Kain im achiv mitoch kas. All this why? Mechamat kin'ah. Comes Sforno and says, no. Look carefully, it says, Vayomer Kain el Hevel Achiv. Don't we know that he's his brother? He says, Bli Meriva. without any kind of quarrel. On the contrary, he spoke to him as if he's his brother. Hey, bro, as if he's his friend. Completely took him by unawares. Kemo ve'arav lo. And as a result, he just waited for an opportunity when Hevel would have his guard down, expecting nothing. V'kamalav. And he rose up against him. Adds the Or HaChaim. Amar lo divrei achva. He told him things that are about brotherhood. Oh, I like you. You're so nice. Litzad shekadam elav sibat ha-sinah mechamat kinah yargish hevel beemtzaut ha-davar. Because Hevel might have sensed that he's jealous, that he's upset because God hadn't accepted his offering. Therefore, he had to make sure that Hevel would not suspect for a moment that he bears him any grudge or any jealousy. Therefore, al ken amar elav ha'achva. That's why it adds that word, achiv. That is what he did. Comes ha'amek davar and says, siper lo dvar Hashem. He told him what God had said, sheyachol limshol bo, that he can rule over him. Velo latet lo lechem, and he won't give him bread. Ela im ken yeshamshehu, unless he serves him. And therefore he tried to enslave him. Ubiyotam basadeh. And he said, you're not getting any bread unless you come out here and weed the fields and plow it like me. You can't just get a free, don't be a freeloader. I'm not giving you no bread. When they were there, hichricho liyotimo be'avototo. He forced him to work together with him. Vayakam kain el hevel, and he got up towards him, as if lelamdo avodat ha'adama, to teach him how to be a farmer. Now let me show you how to hold that shovel. Let me show you how to hold that plow. Ve'al yedei ge'ara v'shevet. And he began to beat him, but beat him as one would beat a slave, ad mavet. But the Ha'amek Davar, the Netziv of Volozhin, argues, but never intending to kill because he didn't know what death is. They don't know what death is. Nobody was killed yet. He simply beat him to get him to do the work. When Hevel seemed disinclined to do this kind of work. Harav Ezrachi, Rosh Yeshiva, says it doesn't tell you what he said to him precisely because it's not important. You see, if you look at how any feud happens, any family quarrel happens, they'll say, he said, she said. It really doesn't make a difference what they said. It's just you start it with nothing. And the next thing you know, people hate each other, they don't talk to each other, and the worst, you suddenly devolve into violence, not knowing where it's going to end up. Again, arguing that Cain didn't quite know what the consequence of beating his brother would be, but that it didn't matter what he said. It's unimportant for us. Because this is an archetypical story. It's brother said to brother, did this, did that. It doesn't really make a difference what he said. The main thing is, he killed him. And then what happens? Vayomer Hashem el Kain. Vayomer Hashem el Kain. Ei hevel achicha. A, as I already told you, is not the same thing as Eifo. Vayomer, and he answers, Lo yadati, Hashomer achi anochi? Am I my brother's keeper? This is the worst, perhaps, sin of yet. He may not have known the consequences of beating his brother. But to say he doesn't know, or to add, am I my brother's keeper? And what's happening is, Mosif Avon al Pesha. Vayomer Hashem, Masita! What did you do? Kol כל דמי אחיך צועקים אליי מן האדמה. And Rashi notices that the voice of your brother's bloods, plural bloods, are crying to me from the ground, from the soil. Because his brother was buried in the soil, he buried him. Where is your brother? Why would the bloods be plural? Explains Rashi based on the Medrash. It's not just your brother, it's all the generations that would have come out of him. His children and great-grandchildren, etc., etc., etc. Through all the generations, look at what you've killed. Rashi also posits that he stabbed him. And he stabbed him not once, but multiple places, so that there was a lot of blood all over the place, springing from his body until he finally bled to death. And now, Arur ata min ha'adama, you are cursed from the soil. Asher patzta et piha, because she opened up her mouth. Notice the personification of the soil, opening up her mouth. Lakachat et dmei achicha meyadecha, to take your brother's blood from your hand. Ah, here comes the punishment. Ki ta'avod et ha'adama, when you till the soil, lo tosef tet kochalach, she will no longer add her strength to your labor. Up until now, it was a dual thing. It was you and the soil. Now it's going to be all you. There's not going to be that kind of wealth that you previously saw, nor yield of the soil like you saw. Rather, navanat tiyeh ba'aretz, you will be a wanderer moving throughout the earth. Let's look carefully at some of the questions that I asked you. Vayomer Kain el Hevel, nichnas imo bidivrei riv u'matza u'litgolel alav lehorgo. He simply provoked him. He started speaking to him in a way that would lead to an excuse to kill him. Ve'yesh bezu midrashei agada, and there's many midrashim about what he said. Ach ze yeshuvo shel mikra. Rashi is referring to several issues. One, that they fought over land. My land, your land, don't step on my territory. Another medrash goes and tells us that they fought over the twins that they were born with, the females. They fought over the woman. Another medrash says, no, mama loves me best, mama loves you best. And the third one is the one that we read together. There is Olam Haba, there isn't Olam Haba. What those midrashim are doing is not actually trying to determine what Cain said to Hevel. They are talking about how wars begin. Wars begin over territory, property, wealth, Lebensraum. Wars begin over a woman, Helen of Troy. Wars begin about who is more beloved than the other, and that's particularly when you're dealing with fratricide. And war begins over religion. My God is bigger than your God. You're going to hell, I'm going to heaven, etc., etc. But on the Pshuto Shel Mikra, it doesn't matter what he said. God then turns to him. And you remember we talked about the fact that this time we don't see Hashem Elohim. It's not God the judge. It's Hashem. It's the Rachamim. It's the God of love that turns to him. And he tells us, Ei Hevel Achicha. And at the same time, in the same fashion, he spoke to Adam and said, Ayeka, where are you? Doesn't God know? Of course he knows. Explains Rashi that nichnasimo libidvarim. We sometimes start a conversation by saying the obvious. So you see a stranger in the grocery store and you say, nice weather we're having, isn't it? Now, you're not giving any information that they don't already know. You're not really asking a question, are you? You know that the weather is nice. You're simply stating the obvious as a way of creating a verbal bridge. Nechama Leibovich quotes Hayakawa, who said that people have conversations that are not only informational, but that a lot of the things that we say that are frankly nonsensical are a way of testing the waters and seeing, are you nice? Are you not nice? Are you responding? Do you want to be my friend? Don't you? For example, you come to a party and you say, hello, how are you? How do you do? And how do they respond? How do you do? We can do this all night. Nobody really cares. How do you do what? It's not really asking you how you are. Nobody cares. Nobody's asking about your welfare. They don't want to know what the doctor said. We don't want to know what your blood pressure is like today. That's not what we're asking. We're trying to get a sense of your face, how you're responding, what you're saying. Anichnasimo bidvarim, says Rashi. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam sometimes assumes the kind of conversational tone to make it easier for you to say what? What could he have said then? He could have said, I killed him. He's in the ground. I meant to. I didn't mean to. I was angry. I lost it. Say something. Instead, what does he do? Lo yadati. I don't know. But he doesn't say, I don't know. I didn't know. You didn't know or you don't know? You know now, you didn't know. Yadati is past tense. Hashomer achi anochi, am I his keeper? Do I have to watch him? The sarcasm is dripping and condemns him. If you look carefully, you'll see how God keeps giving them an opportunity for tshuva over and over and over again. So what was his punishment? Let's compare Rashi and Ramban. Rashi, Arur ata min ha'adama. What Rashi wants you to understand is that the word Arur is actually meaning diminished, whereas bracha means increase. Like a checkbook. These are the checks you paid. These are your deposits. This is a something that's being taken away from you. Arur is always a diminishing, made less. You have become less min ha'adama. And why min ha'adama? Yoter mima shenitkalela hi kvar be'avona. More than she's already been cursed at the time of Adam. V'gam bezu hosifa lachto. But Rashi is not paying attention to the word min. It doesn't say arura ha'adama. It says arura hata min ha'adama. You are cursed from the earth. As if the earth is cursing him. Asher patzta et piha. I am adding a curse to her as well. What is the curse? Lo tosef tot kocha lach. She will no longer give you her strength, her richness. Na v'na tihye, ein lecha reshut ladur b'makom echad. You have no permission to live in one place. You are to become a nomad, a wanderer, a Bedouin. There's only one problem. Cain eventually will build a city. It's called Chanoch, and he'll live there just fine. So how can we say that that's what it means? Comes Ramban. After quoting Rashi, he says, "Ve'enenu nachon." He's not right. Ki bikan lo yirer adama ba'avuro. He didn't curse the earth. He cursed him. Aval amar sheyehu arur mimena. He will be cursed from her, as if the earth is cursing him. Upiresh aklala. And what is the curse that the earth is going to give him? She won't cooperate with you anymore. She won't give you her yield. That is going to force you to do what? To be na vanad. So, you can have as follows. Why did so many Irishmen come to America? Because of the potato famine. Why did the Angles leave Europe and move towards England, because the land that they had over-tilled and over-cultivated stopped yielding it, and there were too many people for it to be fed. They had no choice but to wander. Why did people from Europe go and seek new fortunes in the New World in America? Because there wasn't enough land or property for the population there, given the fact that an acre only produced a certain amount of bread. So if the earth is not going to cooperate with you because the earth is cursing you, you have no choice but to wander from place to place. You'll till land until that land is dried up, and then you'll go to another place. Remember that the Sahara was once very fertile land. It's now become a desert. People from the Sahara had to leave. He then adds, and he tells us what else will happen. He added, Ve'amar, ki ta'avod et ha'adama, when you cultivate the earth, b'chol asher titrach ba la'avod ota kara'ui keneged b'charisha ve'idu, whatever work you'll do, by hoeing, by plowing, whatever you do in the field, and whatever you do appropriately, she won't give you your strength. Meaning, you'll sow a lot, but you'll reap a little. In addition, he will become a wanderer, a nomad, a restless man. Shelo yanuach libo. He will be restless, but not only because he needs to wander from place to place geographically, but because he can't seem to feel at home anywhere, because he is haunted by his conscience, because he is driven by a madness. So the navanad is a psychological punishment as opposed to just being a wanderer. Aval yeh gole le'olam, he'll always be a stranger. Ki onesh harotzchim galut. For the punishment of murder, unintentional murder, is golus. In the Torah, if a person killed another, and there was an inadequate warning, or there were no two kosher witnesses, or it was an accident, the punishment is called galut. But what is galut? Throughout Eretz Yisrael, they established arei miklat. They were cities of refuge, but they were not your home. So one can build a city. One can build a house. One can own property and not be at home. That sense of homelessness, of vulnerability, of an environment that can any minute turn on you, has been the curse of Am Yisrael. And in some respects, what we're seeing here is a foreshadowing of the greatest curse of all, and that is Galut. Galut can be very comfortable. You can make a wonderful living. You can have a beautiful house and a wonderful car. But tomorrow, the riots in the street can turn against you. You are not at home. You're homeless. You are a citizen, but only erstwhile, because tomorrow they can take it away from you. It is the sense that you are forever vulnerable. And any moment, they can attack you and get away with it. And that, in some respects, is a punishment, midah keneged midah. It has nothing to do with whether he actually becomes a Bedouin and wanders the deserts. It has much, much more to do with a sense of where he is, and the Ramban would have known this. Because the Ramban, who was an established rabbi, scholar, as well as a physician, living in Spain, had the tables turned on him in a moment, having won the disputation with the Franciscans. He had to run for his life, and he ran, And he ran, and he ran all over North Africa until he finally made it to Eretz Yisrael, only to die there. So this sense that you're really not safe where you are. I will remind you that German Jews in 1935 thought they were very secure. Vayomer Kain el Hashem, Gadol Avoni Minso. And again, we have these incredibly ambivalent, ambiguous statements. How shall we read this? Gadol Avoni Minso? Is my sin too much to? And look at that word, Naso. Remember Set? Naso. Is my sin too great to tolerate? Is my sin too great to forgive? Or is he saying, oh my, my sin is too great to forgive. What I've done is unforgivable. Let's look at the way our Mefarshim look at this. Says Rashi, Gadol Avoni Minso, Bitmiha. Read this as if it had a question mark and an exclamation point at the end of it. And he's simply quoting here Medrash Rabbah. Atatoen Elyonim Vetachtonim. You carry, you bear the heavens and the earth. What goes up above and what is down below. Ve'avoni yefshecha lit'on, and you can't tolerate my little sin? You, the great God, the loving God, is it too much? And Ramban says, Ve'anachon bapshat shehu vidui. No. Now he comes to understand how it is. And that is, this is a confession. Amal. And what he's actually saying, emes, it's true. Ki gadol avoni misloach. See how he changes that word. My sin is too great to be forgiven. Vetzadikata Hashem. And you, God, are righteous. Veyashar mishpatecha. And your judgments are so straight and so moderate. Though I've been made very punished, I don't believe I'm getting the full measure of what I really deserve. What's another option? Says Radak, I told you that a chatret can sometimes refer not to the act, but to the consequence. And an avon means not what he did, but what the punishment is. And it should be read as, Gadol Avoni Minso. My punishment, my sentence that you've just sentenced me, is much too big to bear. It's inhumane. It's cruel and unusual punishment. Well, by looking at the rest of his sentence, tell me which of those you think hit the pshat. Let's look at this. His next line will tell us which of them is most consistent. Hen gerashta oti hayom me'al pnei adama. You've chased me away from the face of the earth. U'mepanecha esater. And I must hide myself from your face. Ve'hayiti na vanad ba'aretz. And I'll be a wanderer lost on earth. And anybody who finds me, any animal, any person who finds me will surely kill me. I've got no family. I've got no kinfolk to protect me. I've got no homeland. I'm free for the killing. Which of those do you think is most consistent with what he says in Pasuk Yudalad in the 14th verse? I leave it to you. Please answer me.
Is he actually exiled from the presence of God? It doesn't seem that he said that.
He didn't say. He says, Esater, I will hide myself from your God. I will hide.
Well, how can he hide?
You can't hide, can you? You can't hide. So we've already got a flaw. Somehow the notion that if he's kicked out of the kingdom, he'll be able to hide from God. So tell me, which of those do you think is consistent? Is Rashi hitting on the meaning based on what he says in the next verse? You can't tolerate this. Look at what you've done to me. You chased me off my land. I have to hide from you. I'll be a wanderer. Does it work? And then they'll come and kill me. Is the rest of his statement consistent with a sarcastic reading?
Am I my brother's keeper? Or the...
No. I'm asking you, his statement, Gadol Avoni Minso, do I read it as a sarcastic question based on what it follows in the next verse, the 14th verse? And you might say, wait a minute, it's still consistent with the man that said, Hashomer Achi Anochi. So if you're trying to make him consistent all the way, but after all, he had just been punished. So you would expect a certain, at least, show of humility, maybe?
No.
No, why not?
I don't think that the way he looks at a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the way he looks at him, that where he thought he could hide from him, which of course he can't, I think he feels that he can get away with whatever.
Oh, so he's now pleading for a lighter sentence, is what you're saying?
I think he's pleading for a lighter sentence, thinking that he deserves it.
That he deserves a lighter sentence?
Right.
That God is being too harsh on him?
Right.
That would be consistent with a pretty narcissistic guy that thinks he has it coming. Everything belongs to him.
I think that is him.
That is him. Okay.
Definitely.
How I feel, that he is narcissistic. Uh-huh. You know, my brother got a better deal, and, you know, I deserve that better deal. He should be my slave. You said that. He should work in the field. He should...
And so he read God's message as he wanted it to read. And he heard the part that he wanted to hear and didn't hear
That's
the part
right.
that he didn't want to hear.
That's right.
All right. Does anybody think that maybe Ramban got it right, that maybe there is a change in Cain, that maybe Cain is beginning to recognize and he says, what I've done is so horrible that it's unforgivable?
I think he's saying that to get a lesser punishment.
Ah, so you think it's insincere. Even if it is, it's insincere.
Right.
Lynn, what do you want to say?
Well, this is not my thinking, but I have the translation and commentary by Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch.
Yes.
And he has a very different, he has a different take on this entirely.
Mm-hmm. Go share with us.
Not entirely. His sense is that Cain still doesn't think he did that much wrong with killing his brother, but he now realizes that in a sense he's killed himself, that there's this punishment, and that's what he regrets.
So it's not that he regrets the act, he regrets getting caught.
He regrets, in effect, killing himself. I think I'm going to read from this. My sin is too great, says Cain. Had I only murdered my brother, it would be bearable. But I did not know that I had thereby murdered myself, had made myself Navanad, and had forfeited every claim to the world or to brother man.
Okay. So he's now beginning to understand. To Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, we have somebody who didn't quite understand what he was doing. And is beginning to comprehend it.
He's not really repentant for having killed his brother. He's mostly upset that, he's being punished. And it's a terrible, terrible punishment.
Oh, so again, you're saying that he's arguing that somebody should be more lenient because he was psychologically unaware and because he didn't,
Isn't the beginning of remorse, the realization of how sin affects your own neshama. That when he says, I didn't realize I was killing my brother, I was also killing myself. That's like, that's a revelation. Mm-hmm. That's a very high level of revelation. Mm-hmm. That sin affects you and can kill part of yourself.
Okay, so you see, the Ramban would argue as follows. It's hit him about what horrible thing he's done and how it will affect him for the rest of his life. But God, in his mercy, has only sentenced him to galut, to wandering, to restlessness, to a harsh labor life, but certainly not to death. God is not going to punish him with death because he wasn't fully aware, because he wasn't aware of what he was doing, because it was an act of passion, because of whatever. And so when he's arguing, he wants God's protection lest everybody who sees him kills him. Who would kill him? Who will see him? The animals? The parents? Who would kill him? Who would kill him? Why is this fear? Whoever I meet will want to kill me. And therefore God puts a special mark of Cain on him, that he's untouchable, that he needs to live through at least 7 generations before there's any kind of vengeance, if you like, an eye for an eye or a blood for blood. What about the possibility that he's actually saying, as Radak would argue, and as Ibn Ezra would argue, what you've punished me is much too harsh, because you're throwing me to the wolves, and you may not have put me to death, there may not be capital punishment here, but in prison, they'll kill me. You got to give me special protection. And he's asking for special protection, isn't he? Is there full sense of remorse in all of this?
Not at all.
No. Whether you read it this way, even if you think that he's confessing, there's doubt about whether that confession is sincere. And whether that confession is a full recognition. And therefore, I want you to hear the rest of the Ramban here. And he tells us as follows. He says, it's enough that I cannot have any rest wherever I go. But he adds as follows. Umipanecha asater. And I will hide from your face. I can't look you in the face. I hide my face from you. For I cannot stand and pray before you, or bring you a korban or mincha. I can't bring any sacrifice. I can't bring you any gift. I can't appease you. Ki boshti, for I'm ashamed. Vigam nichlamti, I'm humiliated. Ki nasati chelpat avoni. And Lynn, I think this is what Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch is putting his hook into. And we have ignored that little line. I will hide from your face is not I can get away with it. You won't see me. It's that I can't look at you. And that sense that he's lost much more than he could have imagined. Aval ma'ese, but what will I do? Ki kol motzi'i yehargeni, whoever finds me will kill me. Ve'ata bechasdecha harabim, but you in your great love, lo chiyavta oti mita, you didn't demand that I be punished by death. And then what he really means to say is, hine, look, my sin is great. You've given me a big punishment, yes. Aval shamreni, watch over me, shelo e'enesh yoter mima shechiyavta oti. I won't be punished more than what you sentenced me to do. Ki ba'avur she'eye navenad, by being a wanderer, lo evne li bayit, I won't build myself a house, v'gidrot, no fences, b'shum makom, Yeharguni hachayot. If I don't build it, if I don't hide, if I don't create a fortress, the animals will kill me. Ki sar tzilcha me'alai, for your shadow has been removed from me. Hoda, he confessed, ki adam einenu nisgav v'nimlat bekocho. A human being cannot stand or rescue himself on his own volition, on his own strength. Rak b'shmirat elyon alav. Only if the Rebbeinu Shlom watches over him. To the Ramban, there is a sense of realization. Late coming, but a realization. And late coming because he was given warning and he ignored it. He was given warning about the danger of kin'ah, of jealousy, which leads to sin'ah, which leads to hatred, which leads to murder, and which leads to the history of humanity. The ugly part of humanity, where humanity cannot look God in the face, as it were, and say, how can I have a relationship with you, recognizing what I've done? Is Golos worse than death? To the ancient Greeks, definitely. What was the punishment of Oedipus Rex? It was exile. Navanat. To live with it the rest of your life. And what we've seen here is step by step by step the deterioration, the devolution of the human being, and the beginning of the history that we all share.